this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Now, Jay, you've probably never been on a podcast before.
I have not.
So this is how it works.
Show me the ropes, kid. Show me the ropes.
I'm going to do the intro later on.
Okay.
I know. We can actually do that.
Okay.
And so we'll just get into a conversation as if we've had an adult conversation before.
We have not. But you missed my LCD sound system a little.
Why? What happened?
I just said, show me the ropes.
Oh. You know, it's Lollapalooza this weekend.
I know. My friend Allison's there.
But here's the thing. The people that are playing and headlining, it's Blink 182 and The Killers. Like, that kind of just makes you think that rock is kind of lame.
Well, I'll agree with you on Blink 182. The Killers, I have heard, are amazing. I've never seen them live. I do want to see them live.
Sure.
But if they're the biggest band there, it's kind of weird.
Well, they're not, because the biggest bands are probably the EDM stages.
Oh, true. Yeah. True.
All right, my friend. So, Jay, let's go into our history here. Let's just explain to our listeners how we met, how we got to be friends, because we want to give this a bit of a backdrop here, because we're going to get into a real casual conversation about the evolution, the personal evolution that somebody can go through both in their personal life and professional life. So, you and I met
We met personally in 2006 for the first time, but I think we connected in 2004, maybe?
Yeah, pretty long time ago.
Yeah, so, which I think that's a great lesson, because, I mean, we've been friends for a long time now, and people should just reach out. Like, a lot of times people are like, oh, that guy's too busy, or that guy's too big. Like, just reach out and make connections and then help other people. So I reached out, and we just started making jokes, right? Like, we had inside references, and I was writing for Elite FTS at the time in the sports-specific Q&A. And you were kind enough to say, oh, I'm a big fan of that stuff. And I was like, man, I've been following you, blowing up in every magazine. And we're kind of just sharing like similar experiences, which was cool, and a mutual respect. And we liked what each other was doing. And then we just had, you know, we liked Seinfeld. We liked the same kind of music. So I don't remember how we planned. We were both going to Ryan Lee's fitness, whatever it was called, event in 2006 in Connecticut. So you were like, cool, pick me up at the airport. We drove the whole way listening to old Pearl Jam, like live Pearl Jam albums, hit it off, had a great time.
Went to Burger King. Right. So everybody listening, I mean, you can tell how old school and how evolved we are now, considering we went to Burger King.
Right. Yeah. And just a weekend full of just jokes and all kinds of wacky hijinks, out late, having a ton of fun. And that was it. Then we just became friends for life after that. And then, like we said, we ended up at Lollapalooza a couple years later.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. Little do people know, be shocked to know, Craig Valentine had a dance floor battle with Jay Farooge at 4 a.m. at some club that a kid that I used to train was working the door, remember?
Yes.
We went to Lollapalooza all day in the sun, 100 degrees. Partying, having fun, a couple of vodka and Red Bulls, maybe more than a couple for me. And then we're in a circle. And CB himself is hitting the running man, all kinds of stuff.
That was an epic weekend.
It was great.
A lot of fun. So you go back, obviously, a lot further to what you say is you were hardcore in 94. That's when you started your gym. That was like a Jason that I didn't even know. So tell us about how you got to that point, why you got started, what you loved about training, and what you still love about training, and how that has grown into what you do with the podcasting today.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, like, as a kid of the 80s coming up, big fan of pro wrestling. So I'm always looking at Hulk Hogan, the Ultimate Warrior. On the big screen back then, it's Arnold and Stallone. And here I am, like a little skinny fat kid, not that great at sports. And I'm like, man, I want to be jacked like those guys one day. I want to be a superhero. Like, so I got into training. My cousin, Christine, was dating a guy named Eric Wieda. This is probably like 1987. Wow. And he's a pro wrestler at the time, not with WWE or WWF at the time, like in a smaller federation, you know? And he's 6'4", 240. I'm like, oh my God, I gotta be. So he starts writing me programs, and they're 6 or 7 day a week, like 3-hour body part splits and everything. I just start crushing myself, couldn't walk or anything, couldn't move. I was like, well, why isn't this working? I got to figure this out and like get more into this. So I kind of just became obsessed with that, like becoming that real life superhero and becoming like Arnold and Stallone and the Hulkster. And I just trained and read everything I could about training. And
did you eat your vitamins? Did you take your vitamins?
I took my vitamins, said my prayers, clanging and banging, good, all that kind of stuff. And which is funny now, I live a block from Venice Beach, but it became like something that I was so into, and it gave me self-confidence. And I kind of equated like a lot of, you know, life lessons with the iron and whatnot, and just the struggle and the discipline and the dedication. And finally, I figured it out. Like, I was following bodybuilding mag because there wasn't a lot of info back then. You know, it was hard to find good info. So you're reading like Flex Magazine and stuff. And then Dorian Yates came around like 92, 93. And he's like, dude, all that 15 to 20 sets per body part's a waste. Cut it way down and train harder. And that was a huge thing for me. I started making huge gains. So then that led me to like read old school stuff like Stuart McRoberts hard gainer stuff. Not Stuart McRobert. Well, Stuart McRobert had the hard gainer stuff, but John McCallum, like super squats. And then that got me into all the old stuff like Saxon and Hackenschmidt. And kind of that was the whole thing. And it just became my obsession. And in college, I got even more into it. I was just reading everything. And then back then, like in Iron Man magazine, in the back, you could order all these books and then you could start doing certifications. So that was kind of like the early days.
Yeah. So your foundation is training. Music is a huge part of your life.
Yeah.
You know, wrestling. But I mean, you go to live events. You love going out and being the social lubricant, as Ben Askulian says, being that guy and really bring a whole bunch of people together, which is what you do now.
That's my favorite thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And which is what you do now with your podcast, which is getting how many downloads per show now? Like 10,000, 20,000?
It's more than that, but it's getting up there. Yeah. It's growing consistently.
And how many episodes have you done?
We are at maybe close to 190, like closing in on 200 soon.
And then you've gone through where you were not interviewing people and now you're back to interviewing people. So what's the magic of the podcast?
I was just trying to find the balance of what I liked and what the audience liked. And I love when people are here in person. That's amazing. Like, that's a dream scenario. But you know how Skype, it's just like in general, I mean, I don't think you love talking on the phone. I don't really love talking on the phone in general. I'd rather meet someone for coffee, be in person. It's a totally different dynamic. And then there's the weird thing with Skype, which you end up having to do some of these interviews where there's the delay and you don't see the person. It's just not natural.
And people are screwing around on their computer when they're doing it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And honestly, it's hard for me to focus. Like, if you and I are having a conversation, I can really focus. But sometimes if I'm at like the 30 or 45 minute mark on Skype, I don't see the person. Even I'm like, and I'm not as good, you know? Yeah. Like, So that was why I kind of fell out of it. I was like, maybe I'll just do my own stuff. And the audience does like when I do solo episodes and just answer their questions and just ramble and just be wacky and silly and stuff like that. So I'm trying to find the balance of doing both. But it's a game changer, like I said, for like this past week, next week, the following week, we have 5 to 7 guests live each week. And that's amazing for me.
And how long are your shows? Like, where have you seen the sweet spot there for your shows?
It's so hard to say what the sweet spot is because I would say, because I tend to have a shorter attention span, I would be like, I would bet the 45 minute ones would be better. But the most downloads have been longer, like 90 minutes plus, the 2 hours. So I don't know if it's just because those ones are so good and it's the guest. So it's still hard to say for sure.
So it doesn't really matter about the sweet spot of time or frequency. If you have amazing people on, people are going to tune in.
Yep.
Okay. So let's go back to, you know, the way that you were before and how you evolved over time. So from 94 to 2000, 2000 to 2006, 2006 and beyond. Those are kind of like the chapters from when I remember.
Okay.
All right. So let's go 94 to 2000 when you were running the gym, when you're going to the Jersey Shore. Who was that guy and how is he different from you today? And what have you kept from him?
Well, I mean, I don't really glorify the 24/7 hustle like some people do. Like, and I don't think it motivates other people to say, oh, dude, hustle and grind all day. Like, some people are like that, some people are not. I don't glorify it because it's not something that I had to work to achieve. Like, I had to work to achieve a 30-pound muscle gain. But I was born with that kind of hustle DNA. Like, I don't know how not to do that. You know what I mean? So I've always done that. So I've always hustled my face off. I never worked for anybody else. And but I didn't work smart. I just worked super hard, you know, like around the clock.
Back. You're also unemployable. So
exactly. Yeah. I couldn't get a job anywhere anyway. Right. Thanks for pointing that out.
No problem.
Yeah. So but back then I was definitely angrier. And a lot of that stemmed from, you know, stuff from childhood, my parents getting divorced before I went to a new high school, like literally the week before I went to a nice new high school where I didn't know anybody. Mm-hmm. So I was angry, I was rebellious, and I carried a lot of that with me for years. And then the way I trained kind of reflected that, always training too hard and smashing stuff over my head and injuring myself. So I was intense, I had the East Coast thing, the anger, worked hard, not smart.
Played hard
for sure. But here's the thing that some people don't know. Because I started while I was still going to college and I had success rapidly, like by the time I was 20 and still in school, I was making six figures training people. I really didn't play that hard until I was about 28.
Oh, okay.
I was working nonstop and it was hard even to go out. And then later, from 28 to 33, I made up for a lot of time. I went out really hard, which ended up being bad too.
Right. So that was the second stage, like 2000, 2006. You moved to the city. Do you sell your gym or you just
shut? So what happened was after we had the gym for 10 years straight, and that was all I had known, the building was being sold and we all had 6 months to get out. The new tenant was doing something completely different. So we were told we had 6 months. Long story short, it was really hard for me to find a place in Jersey because you had to get a recreational use variance and spend thousands of dollars for a lawyer. Couldn't find a place. During that time, I talked to Dave Tate and Alan Cosgrove almost daily about what to do. So I shut the gym down, moved into the city, which was a huge blessing because it allowed me to finally really focus on my online business, which is how you know I'm able to reach so many people today. So it was a blessing in disguise for sure. And then we reopened the gym a few years later, and there were some, you know, little things in there that happened. I moved a bunch of my people over to my friend John Alvino's gym.
Yeah, so you went online about 2004, 5, or 6, and you
started. I went online in 2001. I was just putting up stuff on my own site, and then shortly after that, Dave asked me to come on and write stuff for Elite.
Yeah.
Which was one of, like, back then, there wasn't a lot of sources on the internet for really solid strength and conditioning and stuff like that. So,
for you to tell your stories of how you sprained your ankle while trying to dunk after like 10 vodka Red Bulls, which is the first thing I read from you.
That's right.
And then I went to the gym the next day and I was talking to, I went to work the next day when I was a trainer and I was talking to my friend and he's like, did you read that article by Jason? And I was like, yeah, that guy's awesome. And then I think like a couple years later, you emailed me and said, hey, my new website is up. I think that was the first communication we ever had.
Okay. And yeah. So there, I was writing from about 2001, 2003, I started selling an ebook.
Okay.
Through Website Wizard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That Ryan Lee got us all on back in the day. And it wasn't really making a lot of money, but then they did Sean Heisen, who's become a longtime friend, in 2003 did a one page feature in Men's Fitness on me. And I went from making maybe like $300 a month to $300 a day from that ebook for 6 weeks straight. That was how much weight a magazine carried back in those days. And I was like, wow, $300 a day, that's $100,000 a year. There's some potential here. So I tried to figure it out myself over the next couple of years. And then you're the one who finally helped me figure it out like around 2005 or six.
Right.
Okay. And that's when my online business really took off and it was pretty much a straight ascension since then.
And then when did you move to California?
We've been here 7 years, almost 7 years now.
Okay, so like 2010, you went back to Jersey, you opened the gym, you and Jen got married in 2010?
Yeah. We got married 2012.
Oh, okay. All right, great.
So there was a bad part there, though, that we don't want to gloss over because I think it's important. Ran the gym for 10 years, made six figures, went into the city. After I sold the gym, I had never not had a 12-hour day responsibility somewhere I had to be. So I moved into the city and I was training people there and I was starting my online business and whatnot. But I was like a kid who grew up in a really strict household and then went to college and went nuts. And that was what I did. So if you'll recall, I would send you crazy texts and whatnot at 3 a.m. about my escapades. But that it became a downward spiral where I partied really hard, spent an inordinate amount of money in the city. And after at that point, I don't know, 12, 15 years of making six figures, completely broke. At 31 years old, I had to call my mom, and I was tearing up with tears in my eyes like, Mom, I blew everything somehow. Like, and she would always say to me throughout my life, dude, you got to save more money. You got, and I was like, whatever, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a lot of strong influences telling me to be smart with it. I was just MC Hammer every day, just out there partying. So completely broke, 31, had to move in with my mom. And I still remember telling you that story around the time. And even to this day, the majority of your responses to me is a joke, which is great. That's what it's, so you go, oh, I can't wait to see the story on the internet. World famous trainer moves in with mom. So that was definitely a struggle, but I moved in with my mom and I was like, screw this. Like, I am going to turn this around, triple what I was making before. And so I stayed at my mom's for a good 6 months or so and barely spent any money. Like, I turned it all around, barely went out, barely did anything.
Well, I'm really glad that you met Jen and she straightened your life out.
Yeah.
What would you
I was living with my mom when I met Jen. So it was like Costanza. I was like, I'm Jay. I live with my mom.
do the opposite.
Yeah.
All right. Jason, up is down. Down is up. Black is white. White is black. All right. So
for the tuna.
Yeah. Summer of Jay. What would you say to your younger self to get started on faster personal development?
I would say the same thing I recommend to every young person is read How to Win Friends and Influence People. I now strongly believe in improv. I think everybody should take an improv class or six. Like, I think it should be required in high school. I would say,
you know, can I just add to that? I think that anybody that struggles with communication, just do anything on communication.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I did 105 podcast interviews last year.
Wow.
And I know that has dramatically made a huge difference.
100%.
In not only just me speaking in podcasts and not only me speaking on stage, but just me in casual conversation with people, for someone that I always used to feel like I was talking with marbles in my mouth. And so it almost like those first couple words would be weird and awkward. And now they flow much better. So whether it's improv, whether it is podcasts, just go and do the communication. You get so much better.
I agree 100%. Take a public speaking class and every opportunity you get, like if you're standing in the elevator with someone, instead of being the weirdo who just stares at the numbers, just say hi. Like at if you're checking out at Whole Foods, talk to the cashier. Like that was what I would do, is just make my, cause it was really weird. Like I was socially awkward and it was hard for me. So I just set a goal the same way you do with training or a sport or whatever you work, your business, set goals. Like at the end of the day, I want to have made eye contact with, or at least said hi, or even given a little nod to somebody, and then I'll initiate a conversation. And then maybe I'll figure out, you know, 6 months later, I'll figure out some cool conversation starters.
Yeah.
Instead of just, what do you do? Maybe I'll come up with something more interesting, read more books about that. Like there's always opportunities. Go on meetup.com and join leagues, go to wine tastings, art events, whatever. Because for a lot of people, I think it's a rare person who can go into a room or an event where you don't know anybody and you're super natural and comfortable. So for everybody, that's the thing. Just push yourself out and do it as often as you can. And then be the one to make plans with your friends. Like, oh, we're gonna go here, we're gonna meet at this time. There's so many ways you can do it all day long if you look for the opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, you can talk to your Uber driver. I mean, the thing I did today when on the plane right out here, I just asked, you know, a couple of women if they needed hands putting their bags up because they were, you know, giant bags. So,
yeah.
You know, and Bedros is awesome at this. Yeah. I mean, he just like talks to everybody at Starbucks, you know, just casual conversation. Yeah. It's so easy. It's just like, hey, how you doing? Hey, I like what you got there. And away you go. And people just generally want to talk.
Yeah.
So once you get them going, you just kind of listen.
Yeah. So 2 points about that. One, surround yourself with people who are like that, like you're saying.
Absolutely.
And it'll rub off on you. Two, try to learn from those people. Like even if you just happen to be around them at a dinner or at a bar or something somewhere, be like, okay, like don't just be so in your own world or looking at your phone. Like see how Bedros runs things or operates or works their own. Like, oh, okay, I can do that next time. I'll try that, you know? And then even about, don't be OCD about it, but before you go to an event, kind of prepare in your head the way you'd visualize your workout or something. Like, all right, here's what I want to do. Here's how I want to approach people. And then afterwards, do a little recap, like on the drive home. What could I have done better? What should I do next time? Stuff like that.
Yeah. And one other thing that you do really well is bring people together. So that way you don't necessarily have to go into a room of strangers.
Yeah.
But now you're bringing a bunch of people together from different worlds and you don't have to be the star of attention. But when you're bringing those people together, they're going to say, oh, you know, he's such a great person. He brought all these people together and you're going to have a good time and you're going to have good connections. And that's a great thing to do as well.
Yeah. And people always remember the person who connects them with everybody else. So there's like a great book, Never Eat Alone. by Keith Ferrazzi, and he talks about being a super connector. And that's what I do as often as I can. Like this week, I was connecting pro wrestlers and guys who own gyms and famous chefs, and we're all just hanging out, and I'm sending them emails. How can we help you? How can we help each other? But do it. There's a weird thing on the internet in certain cultures where people are like, oh, help people, and then somehow you'll have a favor owed you later. Don't do it like that. Just do it because you genuinely want to do it and help people.
Right, because it's also interesting too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right. So how did you personally evolve over from 94 to 2014, you know, over those 20 years?
It's a lot to talk about. Like,
well, yeah, but I mean, you know, you said you had the anger, you don't have the anger anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you had...
Well, so meditation was huge for that. It's been at least 10 years I've been meditating now.
Okay.
Maybe more.
Generally with HoloSync?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've downloaded a few other apps that I'll use from here.
Okay.
Once in a
Headspace?
While. Headspace? I don't really love Headspace. I don't like the guy talking to me.
Okay.
Yeah. yeah. But meditation has definitely helped with that. Eliminating the negative, angry people. A lot of people always say that kind of cliche that your problems will follow you wherever you go and you can't move and leave your problems behind. I don't believe in that. You can reinvent yourself. It's hard. If you have a certain mindset and everyone around you has that mindset and they all think of you as the same guy they've known for 30 years, it is hard to change that. Like, so if you move somewhere else, you get new perspective, you learn different things, you see, you know, different viewpoints, and you can reinvent yourself. It's really important to reinvent yourself. In every way. Like, for example, a couple of my friends are pro wrestlers who were on this week, and you have to reinvent yourself to stay relevant. Like, The Undertaker's reinvented himself a million times. So I think everybody should reinvent themselves. Henry Rollins talks about that all the time, like always be reinventing yourself. So always try to get better, try to evolve, and know that a lot of people don't have that mindset. So they will resent you, or they'll get bitter, or they'll try to hold you back, like the crab theory, you know what I mean? So evolve, move on. And
well, I think the greatest example of reinventing yourself, take a look at Arnold. Arnold was,
of course,
you know, poor kid from Austria. Then he was in the military. Then he was a bodybuilder. Then he was an actor. Then he was, you know, the governor. And, you know, whatever. He's an entrepreneur now.
Right. And so, The Rock's following a similar path.
Right. I mean, that guy, he makes it look easy, but it's not actually that hard for anybody to do.
Right.
So they can just go and do it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? Someone's going to say, oh, you're different.
Yeah.
No, actually.
And let me say this. What's so cool about hanging out with people who are on that same wavelength is you get better all the time. When I'm with people, and this may sound harsh or whatever, but people need to do this if they want to get where they want in life. When I'm with people that I've known for 20 years and they're the exact same they were 20 years ago, I get antsy. I want to get away from them. When I'm with you and I see how much, like you just said, how much better you are in social situations, it might just be us out at a Mexican restaurant and I see you interact with people. I'm like, that is amazing. That's so inspirational.
That is amazing. He's actually talking to another human being.
You know what I mean? To evolve that much. Because like you said, it's not your natural thing. It's out of your comfort zone. Last night, we went to see my buddy Rich do improv. And afterwards, not only is Rich amazing in improv, but afterwards, the conversation I had with Jen was, how great was Rich with 10 of us outside talking after? Way better than he was 2 years ago. Because Rich is big into personal development. And you know, overcoming things like that. So that kind of stuff is so cool. And don't miss it. Like, don't miss those small things in life. Be around those people who are always pushing themselves.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And I actually maybe need to correct myself before, because I said, you know, the worst thing that could happen is that people say you're different. But actually, that is a huge problem to a lot of people. They don't want people from their past to say, oh, you're different, you've changed. But
yeah,
I mean, there's got to be a good reason for that, right?
Yeah, you just got to let go of those people. Like, they're only going to hold you back.
So you moved out to California, and that kind of coincided with a lot of personal development changes.
So many changes since I've been here.
Right. And was it just a matter of you would have changed anywhere anyways, or was it being here has helped you as well?
I would have continued to grow if I stayed in Jersey, but nowhere near at the same level. The evolution wouldn't have been as extreme, because I just think, you know, as dedicated as I was, there was a lot of people around me that I wouldn't have been able to escape. And then there's just all the environment, like the same environment. It's hard to escape that sometimes. Like, I have certain triggers that if I go here, or if I see these people, or if I drive down that road, it's going to remind me of stuff, and I'm going to be bitter or angry or negative or glasses half empty. Like, and I don't want to do that. So I had to get out and start fresh somewhere. And it was life changing.
What about the sunshine?
Yeah, of course, because of the physiological, you know, you get more vitamin D, like you just feel so much better. I hate the winter. People I certainly had seasonal depression and like, I can't recommend highly enough if you can move somewhere where it's warm to do that, which is why I'm finding you a place this week.
There you go, man. There you go. All right. So what are some powerful habits and routines that allow you to live a healthy, happy, and productive life? So you talked about meditation. What else do you do?
Yeah. So with a lot of your help and influence and, you know, reading your book and whatnot, my morning is pretty solid. Like I always get, first thing as I'll meditate, I'll journal. And I made the mistake, like you've probably seen 1,000 times, you know, doing too much in your morning routine, journaling too much.
You're trying to put a 10 pounds of potatoes in a 5 pound bag
exactly.
in the morning.
Yeah. So I'll keep it short and sweet. Do my meditation and journal. And then I do always focus on my most important task of the day. Bang that out, get that done, and distraction free. That's huge. So no phone, no internet, no social, anything like that first thing in the morning. Get outside. I think it's really important to get natural sunlight and fresh air first thing in the morning. It helps you sleep better. It helps set your mood for the day, all that. So get outside early with Bronx for a half hour walk. And during that time, I'll kind of, I think years ago, Alan Cosgrove said walking university or something. So I'll listen to something, you know, that's educational or to fire me up for the day. Some days it's just music. Like some days I'm on information overload. So just listen to songs, whatever. And then along the way, I know so many people because I talk to everybody. So we'll stop and interact, which makes me feel good. And then I put a smile on someone else's face. Like it just sets the tone for the day, as opposed to just sitting in here like the Unabomber all day. I'm getting out and interacting. You know what I mean?
Very nice.
It's great. So then other than that, really, I focus on the most important task. I've learned to delegate more stuff. I've definitely learned to not try to do everything. There's a million things I know I could do. And sometimes I'll feel it a little, like I'll see you doing something or Bedros doing something or someone like, I'm not doing that. I wonder if I should, but I'm better about like, nah, that's not my strength. I'm good with this, you know? And
yeah, it's like Howard Stern trying to do the tech stuff.
Howard
Stern should just do what Howard Stern does.
Yeah, exactly. And so the thing is, that's probably something that we all discover about ourselves as we grow and get older. Like, what am I really good at? What am I the best at? You know, what's my strength? And it's funny because years ago, being around people and doing all these things we're talking about would not have been my strength, which is why I wrote. I primarily wrote. You never saw pictures of me. You never saw me on podcasts. You never saw videos of me. I was still super insecure. I didn't think I could do that stuff. Now I spend as much time around people as I can all the time. And I think that's my strength. Like when the Dodgers hired me, it was for that, to be around people and teach people skills and confidence and communication. And podcast guests that come over that are really successful, like they'll hang out after and ask me for tips on that or life advice. And I'm like, it's funny, like I built a really successful business writing and being alone, but that's actually not my strength. Like I'm better around people and doing things and connecting people and stuff like you're saying.
Yeah, so, I used to hate being on the computer.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in 2006.
Yeah, but I plowed through and built a successful business. But in retrospect, if I went back, I'd say, man, if I had the self-confidence and pushed myself like I should have then, maybe things would have been different. Like I would have got on video sooner and would have done more speaking sooner, and it could have evolved even a totally different way.
What was the trigger that allowed you to make that jump?
I don't think it was one thing. I think it was just, you know, over the last at least 7 years since we've been here, just getting out more, pushing myself, doing all the stuff we're talking about, reading the right books, spending time with the right people. And like, this is what I want. I want to be this kind of person. So just pushing harder.
What have you learned since owning Bronx?
So many things. Patience, for sure. To live in the moment. To appreciate the small stuff. I mean, you know, like when you got off the elevator before, the guy was doing backflips. Like he was out of his mind just to see somebody. And so you learn to appreciate those things. You learn to slow down. Like a lot of times I'll be in the middle of hustle and grinding, thinking about a million things. And he's just so excited that I will just chill. Like, it's great to see him. If I see him in the middle of the day, I'll just get down and lay down next to him, rub him for a little while and slow down. Like, this is super important. And I don't have kids, so I can't relate to a lot of people who have kids. But it is a living being that depends on you for everything. So it helps you not be so focused on yourself. Like, this guy's got to get out. He's got to get playtime. He's got to get, attention. He's got to get fed. So, just so many things.
Do you find that you have really just always feel better? You overcome any sort of sadness, depression, or anything when you just turn your focus outward?
Yeah.
As opposed to inward, right? When you're cranking behind the computer, it just gets worse.
It totally, yeah. So I tend to go into a downward spiral if I have too much alone time. And I thought that back in the day, I needed a lot more alone time. That's really bad for me. Like, so if I have a schedule that's crazy and I'm with people and have to bounce around, that's really good for me. And I could be super high energy and be my best self. I can make other people happy. I could help them. But if I have huge chunks of alone time every day, I will evaluate everything I do. I'll be like, oh, that's not good enough. It should be better. You know what I mean? But if I just keep doing stuff and the ball keeps rolling, then momentum and the success kind of snowballs. And I don't have that time to sit there and evaluate myself so much and be so hard on myself.
Now, you do some self-reflection though, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, and so walk us through what you do for self-reflection, how that's helped you even like just catch like, hey, I got to stop doing this and here's how I can stop, you know, doing this and improve this. Has there been like any examples of that?
Yeah. So because it's funny, so we're at close to 200 episodes of the podcast now, but because a couple of years ago when we started, I still didn't have the level of self-confidence I have today. And I was even more insecure. I couldn't listen to the podcast. So I went through, I don't know, 80 or 100 episodes without listening to them. And then, which, and not to compare myself to famous actors, but I've heard a lot of famous actors can't do that. Like Joaquin Phoenix can't watch himself. Huh. Like he'll go to a premiere party, greet everybody, walk down the red carpet, and then he sneaks out the back door. And
well, most people don't like to listen to themselves.
Yeah.
It's awkward.
Which was hard first too for me. But then I realized that how else am I going to get better?
Okay.
So I would kind of listen and say, oh, I shouldn't do that so much. I should do more of that. And then, you know, obviously listen to people that I want to be like Howard Stern, Jimmy Fallon. Let me try doing more of that.
And I have heard actually that you two watches every single one of their concerts.
Really?
I don't know if that's an exaggeration, but I've heard the stories that they will just, you know, the next day or whatever, they'll just be in the hotel room watching the concert.
It makes sense. I mean, all athletes watch game film, you know? It makes sense for sure.
All right, so let's go into some rapid fire questions. I'm just going to say one word and then you give me a response to it. We might go deeper down depending on what you say.
All right.
Mindset.
Positive.
All right.
Am I just doing a one word or I can just expand?
Well, you can rap a little bit more.
Okay. So my mindset, like I said, I grew up super negative, scared of a lot of things. I love my mom to death, but she's scared of everything. Like she always thought we were going to get hurt, we were going to get sick. So I was scared. Like I had a lot of fear. And this is really bizarre, but I think I may have told you this. My dad took pleasure in scaring us when we were a kid. Like he would put on weird masks and it was dark and scare me. So I was terrified of a lot of stuff throughout most of my life, at least the first half of my life.
All right. So how did you go to positive mindset?
You know, I mean, just not to keep repeating myself, but by reading the right books, spending more time with you and less time with people who are negative. I grew up around a lot of negative people and there's an East Coast.
Just the entire state of Jersey.
Well, there is an East Coast thing. Like if you talk to people who live in Jersey or New York, they're like, no, I get it. Like once I escaped, I saw how kind of negative and bitter and angry everyone is over there. And not everyone, of course, but there is that stereotype.
Yeah.
So it's just getting around the right people. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. You've mentioned books a couple of times now. So a couple of books that have helped you in the past, you know, aside from, you mentioned Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win.
I like, Essentialism, The One Thing, just to stay, you know, hyper-focused on not doing too much.
Yeah.
Tao Te Ching.
Power of Less. What's Leo's book?
Power of Less.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Any book on essentialism or simplicity or minimalism, I really always enjoy those. And I like to read one of those at least once a year to kind of, you know, reinforce the message.
Okay. Have you watched the movie Minimalism?
Yeah, really good.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Great. I liked it. I'm actually, Joshua Becker's coming on and I had one of the other minimalists on as well.
Okay. Very good. I was a minimalist before it was called minimalist. I was just a guy with no stuff.
Yeah.
And most of the time it's because I didn't have any money. All right. Childhood.
It wasn't great actually. And no knock against my mom. I love her. We have our best relationship we've ever had now, but I have a lot of harsh memories. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those are coming back actually recently when I go to the float tank, which is crazy because in the float tank, you can get into a deep meditative state. And I don't know what triggered it, but the last few times I've gone to the float tank, names that I have not thought of in 35 years of kids who used to beat me up and pummel me and abuse me in every kind of way have come out. And I've been seeing them when I'm in the float tank and I'm like, wow, it kind of explained to me why I hustle so hard and work so hard and maybe have that chip on my shoulder, because like those kids used to hate me and make fun of me and beat me up all the time.
So that float tank is just like cleaning out your closet?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Friends.
The most important thing to me. And sometimes, you know, I don't want to, I hesitate to say this because I'll just say, I think sometimes I almost put friend, I always put friendship ahead of making money or business or anything like that. But so much so that I probably get less work done than I should sometimes, because I'm just like, look, if you're here, if you flew in from out of town, it doesn't matter what else I have going on. I'm crossing it off the schedule. Like, we're hanging out. If someone comes over for a podcast and we hit it off, I'm blocking out like 4 hours just to hang out with that person and go to coffee across the street or whatever. Like, I prioritize that so much, because for my childhood, I didn't have a lot of close friends. I was made fun of. I was the last kid picked. I was beat up. And I just like, I value it so much. Like, there's nothing like to hang out with you and Bedros or Luca or something. Like, that's the most important thing to me. If I could just get paid to hang out with my friends and make them laugh and make them feel better, you know, that would be the epitome for me.
You'd be like Charlie Murphy.
Yeah.
How do you do it now, though, that you have such a large circle of friends? Like, you have a lot of friends now.
I know a lot of people.
How do you make sure that you take care of everyone, that you're with the right ones,
and that you
aren't actually with people 24 hours a day, seven days a week?
Which, again, that's maybe why I don't get quite as much done, because I do prioritize. Like, I'll sit down when I have a break during the day, if I'm hustling, I'll go through my phone and be like, all right, who haven't I talked to in a little while? Let me just shoot him a text message.
Okay.
Who haven't I seen in a while? And then I'll start, like, I have all my LA friends categorized in my phone. So I could be like, all right, who are we hanging out with on Wednesday? Who are we hanging out with this weekend? Who I haven't seen in a while? Who needs to connect?
Mm-hmm.
So I spend a lot of time each day on that, sending emails, sending texts. Now, I was kind of trying to back away from social media for a while. Like, you were, like, I remember when you unfollowed everybody on Twitter years back and I got it. But now I'm kind of refollowing all my friends and trying to comment on their stuff. And I do spend a lot of time like just building those relationships and maintaining those relationships. And when I say that maybe it compromises how much I get done or my business, I don't want people to take that the wrong way. Like, don't just be a ruthless businessman and forget about your friends. Like, I balance it out. It works for me.
Well, how do you tell somebody who's a young person coming up? Like, how do they build a bigger social reach of influencers, of people that will lift them up, as opposed to just more guys like themselves, which is good,
yeah,
you know, hustlers and stuff, but how do they get up to the next level and get that influence? Like, how do you get your childhood idols onto your podcast in your house?
Yeah. So you have to go to events all the time, like spend money on events, go to different events, and don't just go to events that are specific to your industry. Go to, you know, business events, networking events, any kind of events, like spend money, go there. Some stuff, maybe just social stuff. Again, like meetup.com, whatever it may be. And then as far as reaching people who are at a higher level than you, reach out to them. Like, don't be scared. Sometimes they'll reply. Like, it's crazy. And then you never know who's watching too. Like, if you're doing good work online in your field, you would be shocked. I'm shocked almost on a monthly basis when someone super famous, they might not even tell me, but someone's like, hey, I was talking to XYZ from this movie or from this group. They listen to your podcast or they watch your stuff. Or like, we'll get emails from some of the most famous athletes or whatever. And they're like, hey, man, I love your stuff. I'm like, that's crazy. So you never know who's watching. And I would say, if there's people you want to reach out to, the simple, like all their stuff, comment all the time. So you know how you recognize a lot of people's names? Like, if you say, hey, do you know Johnny Wilkerson? I'm like, oh yeah, that guy comments on my stuff for 5 years. And because of that, I'm going to give him my attention. Like, sure. I've literally hopped on the phone with guys. When guys are like, bro, your last podcast hit me so hard. I have family issues. What do you think I should do? I was like, you know what? Call me on Skype right now. I'll talk to you for a half hour for free. So people will do that. Like, don't think they're too busy or they're too big. Sometimes people will surprise you. Just comment, be there, be in front of them. Try to connect people as often as you can. Connecting people, like I said, you can't do enough of that. That's huge. And just get around people. There's ways to get around people. Like, if someone's speaking somewhere, pay $1,000 to go to that event and try to grab 2 seconds of their time and do something memorable afterwards.
Yeah, very good point. Now, what is one mistake you've made with people or that you see other people making with people that is a real no-no?
I think it's some people, I don't know who is writing about this or putting this thing out there, like, and it's right, but people have misinterpreted it and some people do it wrong. Like, oh, always go to people with a giving hand, trying to help them. And you should, but some people do it in a way that you can tell it's fake. Like they'll send me a template email. Don't do that.
Right.
Like send them an email that really connects, like you have a common interest. And like, you know, if their favorite band is Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, like if that's your favorite band, cool. You have a common interest. Like try to establish a common interest, any kind of commonalities, common ties is always good. Like if someone wants to connect with you, they don't care about my stuff, but they know we're friends. Say, hey, I know you're friends with Jay, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You got to try to establish those common ties, those links, all that kind of stuff. Do try to help people. But honestly, like, how am I going to help The Rock right now? Like, sometimes you can't help them, but
yeah,
I don't know.
You know, one thing that you were saying before we were doing our show is you were talking about the podcast guests that you had. And you were saying, I just do an hour of research before they come on. And going back to those 105 podcasts I've done, I mean, I've done shows where people, all they do is just ask questions that I sent them and they don't do any research. And they're like, you know, when we get on, the first question they ask me is, how do you say your name? It's like, okay, well,
come on.
Yeah. So like now I'm just, you know, another wheel on the cog sort of thing. And it's just, and it's not good. So just a little bit of effort, right?
That's the thing. Like, yes, you want to simplify and outsource and delegate, but not the personal relationship stuff. Don't do that. Like, don't have your assistant doing all that stuff. Like, you need to be personal. And again, no template emails or stuff like that.
Very good. All right. Vision.
Vision.
Did you have one in 94?
No.
When did you start even having one? When you went online?
No, like, so I just used to live day to day. Like I would get up, be psyched to get up at 6 and go train people. And that was it. I didn't really think big picture and long term, maybe until I got out here. And I don't know if that was because we just thought so small, like, you know, like, and maybe I didn't have the confidence. I didn't think things were possible. So just like, as long as I can get up tomorrow and go to the gym for 12 hours and squat and deadlift, like that's it. That's a good life. I thought I'd probably be doing that till I was 60. It's transitioned so much.
And slinging pizzas.
Slinging pizzas at 2 in the morning at the Jersey Shore, for sure. That now I think so many things are possible that sometimes I have to bring myself in check. Like, dude, you can't try to do every one of these things. But
do you think it's because you were a hustler that you didn't have a vision? Do you think that they can?
Maybe because I was so busy all the time. I was just like, let's just get to it. And then at the end of the day, I was wiped out. Like, it was just working so much. But now that I've expanded my horizons and built up my confidence and I have so many good people around me, I'm like, man, there's so many things I can do and at a higher level.
All right, music.
Pearl Jam, Public Enemy, one of the most important things in my life. I listen to music, I don't know, 8 hours a day, every day. There's always music on in that living room. Listen to it in the gym, in the car. I don't know anyone that loves music as much as I do. Knows more lyrics than I do, has been to more live events than I do. It just, it touches my soul so much and just causes this visceral reaction. It's really one of the most important things in my life. And it's hard for me to relate to people who aren't into music when they're like, whatever. Like, I listen to everything. I'm like, oh, I don't think we could be friends.
Mentors.
You. What's really cool is my mentors are some of my closest friends.
Sure.
You, Bedros, Cosgrove, Dave Tate. Those are some of the names that come to mind immediately.
Do you find
and super important, like have mentors.
Yeah. Do you find that you can get a mentor relationship from a book or video, or do you need to talk to your mentors?
I think you need to talk to them and connect with them and be around them, you know, and then sometimes I've been disappointed when I read a book and I'm like, that's awesome. And then I spend time with that person. They're very different. I'm like, it doesn't have the same impact anymore.
What do you seek to get from a mentor? And I don't mean that in a negative way, but you know, like what does a mentor bring to you, I suppose?
Accountability, motivation. They're on the same path that I want to be on. I'm learning from them. And so you can learn, like when you and I go hang out after this, I'm not going to ask you life lessons. You're not going to ask me life lessons per se. Same thing when I'm with B, like B and I went out to get sushi, but it's just like, oh, how does he interact with that person? How has he evolved? Oh, he's better than last time. Cool. I could be better at my weakness than last time. It's just osmosis and just observing it, you know, being aware.
Yeah. Very important. Just to be around the people who are doing the things that you want to learn how to do properly.
Yeah. And then also you have to balance Roosevelt said, comparison is the thief of joy, which I agree with, but there's some healthy comparison too. Like if I see, okay, Craig and B and Kazuro are going to this level and I'm still sitting down here, that's not that great. But I need to know what makes me happy, what makes them happy. So kind of stay, you know, but keep the balance in your head of not getting like too bummed out about it either.
Okay, so we talked before about, you know, getting connected with people at a higher level. Is there anything different that you would add to that when you're trying to get connected with a mentor?
Not really.
Okay.
I don't think so.
All right, very good. So then next, comfort zone.
Push yourself out of it, for sure.
And how do you do that?
Just realize things that you fear. Like if you fear something, you should probably do it. Like it's almost a cliche at this point, but cold showers, like start your day like that, whatever's going to make you uncomfortable, do it. And it doesn't have to be big things. Like I'm not saying go jump out of a plane every morning. Again, just talking to people or whatever it may be. Like even something for me, like taking a yoga class is outside of my comfort zone. So I know for my body and for my mobility and flexibility and health and calming down a little bit, I should do it more often. But sometimes I'm like, I'm walking in there. Everybody knows what they're doing. I'm like, they're going to be looking at me. So I know that like, that's stupid. Like I have to do it, you know? So if you feel that resistance, it's probably something you should do and just face it and do it.
Yeah. And you're wearing Zuba pants and they're wearing yoga pants. And
yeah. Yeah. I got the like animal and hawk, zebra stripes, red and blue.
Were you getting out of your comfort zone when you went to improv for the first time?
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
So you walk in there, it's full of strangers. You have
pretty nervous.
Generally no idea what you're doing.
No idea.
What was it like first day?
I was definitely nervous. I was stressed out. I was probably sweating and shaking and dry mouth the whole time. But probably a half hour into it, I was like, I'm doing way better than everybody here. And I had already kind of pushed myself to evolve and grow to that point. And then I just was like, oh, screw it. I'm going to do the same thing I do where in places that I'm comfortable. I'm going to step up. I'm going to be the first to volunteer. I'm going to take the lead. After class, I'm going to talk to everybody when they're being weird. I'm going to connect people with other people. I'm going to say, hey, guys, let's go get coffee after class. And then I was just like, now I'm all of a sudden in my comfort zone. So, and that helped me get way better. And then, of course, same thing, too. It's like being around you or B. I would look at the people who were better than me and say, oh, okay, I see how they do that. Let me try that.
You mentioned, being the first to do something. And so, I mean, how important is it for somebody to be the to step out of their comfort zone and just like be the first to volunteer on something?
I think it's super important. I say that all the time. Like, again, when I was in front of 150 or 180 people at the Dodgers.
At their training facility. Camp?
There? Yeah. And I told them how important it was. So then later when we would ask for volunteers or some of the coaches asked for volunteers for different stuff, I was yelling in the back like, dude, get up. Like it sets the tone for the rest of your life. Nobody wants to do it. So that's
because it's never as bad as you think.
No, of course. Nothing's ever as bad as you think almost. So yeah, you just push yourself. Always be the first one to volunteer. Just do it and even make the decision. Like if you're sitting around with five friends, what bar should we go to? Just say, dude, we're going to O'Brien's. That's it. Like just do that all the time. And then it becomes a habit. And making decisions rapidly is something that was hard for me years ago. And I always try to tell people that's important too. Like even if it comes down to where are we going or what wallpaper should you put up? Like just force yourself to make decisions faster. Like pretend you're the president and someone comes in and says, here's this crisis. What should we do? You can't say, oh, let me call six friends and deliberate. I'll get back to you in 2 weeks. Like just force yourself and it just snowballs from there. And then you feel more confident in everything you do.
All right. Fear.
It cripples a lot of people. It crippled me for years. It holds you back. Jamie Foxx, what did he say? Everything you want's on the other side of fear. I don't know who said that, but I know Jamie Foxx was quoting that if he didn't say that. But yeah, like if you push yourself through the fear, usually good stuff happens. If you just let it cripple you, nothing happens. And that's bad.
Were you scared when you asked Jen to marry you? I've never heard this story. Can you tell it?
It's not like there's no amazing story. It was just, it was Christmas morning and my stepdad had gotten sick and I'm not going to go into that whole thing, but it was Christmas morning and it just seemed like the right time. And so she had no idea it was coming, which was cool. So it was a surprise. So I gave her a bunch of stuff and then I was like, oh, that's it. I was like, oh, you know what? I did forget one other gift to give you. And I was like, it's nothing. It's just a little something I found. And then she opened it. As she got it, then I got down on one knee and the whole thing.
And, she cried.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, the whole family was all excited and everything.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. Comedy.
One of the other most important things in my life, like comedy and music. I make time for comedy every day via multiple ways. All day I try to make time for comedy. So at night, I always play like Jimmy Fallon or Netflix stand-up. Like I want to laugh. I have to laugh all day. I'll reach out to my friends who I know are going to send me some funny stuff just via text. I'll send them funny stuff. So you're one, like you could, people might not always know this about Craig, but amazing sense of humor, always sends you like some funny stuff, has some witty comebacks, amazing memory. So like I'll reach out to you, Mike DeSani, Todd Coker, guys that I'm friends with that have just great senses of humor. So it's really important. I think, you know, it's a super cliche, but laughter is the best medicine. You got to laugh. And if you get to the end of your day and you realize that you've just been hustling and grinding and stressed out all day, make time to laugh before you go to bed. Put on Dave Chappelle or something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Anger.
I think anger, I still do love anger as an emotion. You have to have some anger because it pushes you. There have to be things you're angry about, even if it's you're angry about social conditions and you want to fix stuff. Like misdirected bad anger and jealousy and hater anger, that's terrible. But you have to have anger. Like when I train, I'm angry. I don't like to socialize and joke around. I mean, I will, but like when I go into a set, I like to get angry. Like you can't just walk through life like the Dalai Lama. Like that's really hard to do. Like everybody has some anger. So directed in the right ways, directed for change, directed to, you know, overcome whatever held you back. Like I was angry about being weird and socially awkward and wasting a lot of years. So I say, okay, now it's time to go. Like let that anger fuel you. You know what I'm saying? So it can be good.
Man, it's so hard to imagine you or Bedros as socially awkward, but you both claim it. But I don't even remember like you being socially awkward when I met you in 2006. So you must have been
that out of it said by then. You would say I'm better today, though.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, by 2006, I had been on the gym floor in groups since for like 12 years. So and when we were hanging out that weekend, it was around fitness people and stuff like that. So I was still a little bit comfortable.
Yeah.
You know,
and there was some alcohol involved.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. So training.
So important in my life. I can't not do it. Like if I take a week off, like you should take a week off. It drives me insane. I just like it. I always talk about like Arnold and The Rock and how they talk about the life lessons that you learn in the gym, overcoming the resistance, overcoming the struggle, the dedication, pushing, challenging yourself. It's so important to me. It's one of those daily habits that just makes all the difference.
All right. Very good. All right. So let's talk a little bit about business. Not too much because you're really an anti-marketing guy. It's funny. I was watching a video yesterday that this guy made about Deadmau5, who's like this DJ, and they were talking about how he's the exact opposite of marketing. Like he yells at people on Twitter, gets in fights all the time. Like, and you don't yell at people, but you're not a marketing guy, but you're very successful. So what is it that's allowed you to do that?
Well, you do have to market. Like you can't be totally anti-marketing and anti-business because I know friends who are super smart and talented at what they do and they're so anti-marketing. They're like, dude, you're leaving so much. I'm like, why even be in business? You know, like you got to find the balance that's right for you. So I would say you certainly should. You need a good product. You need to be good at your craft, whether it's a restaurant, whether you have an online business, training, music, whatever. You need to be good at that. But then you need to learn how to market it. Like if you're an independent singer, you need to learn how to use social media correctly and how to get signed by an indie label, put out your own stuff like Pearl Jam does. Like you need to know this stuff. You can't just focus on your craft. So some people maybe take it too far. So market towards the audience that you want, like people who are like you, market in a way that you like to be marketed towards. Like if you don't like this way of being marketed to, and that turns you off, like, oh, that feels sleazy, then don't do it. Even if someone says, dude, I guarantee it's going to make you $5 million a day. But if you don't like it, you're going to self-sabotage it. I know a lot of people, and you do too, who self-sabotage for that. So I'd say you got to find what's right for you. I would say, say no. Often, like it's hard when you're struggling to put food on the table and to pay the bills to say no. But if you do something just for money, you regret it later, whether it be take on that client or market a certain way or get into a business venture. So learn to say no. Differentiate yourself for sure. it definitely helps if you're starting out. You can't try to appeal to everyone because you're going to appeal to no one. So kind of have that avatar and speak to someone specifically. Now, when you grow bigger, that kind of goes out the window because like small business advice that you and I adhere to and might recommend, if you watch Shark Tank, that's not like you want to cast the biggest net. So as you grow, that can happen. But when you're small and starting out, keep like a super narrow focus.
You mentioned differentiation. I want to talk about that, but I almost feel like it's not a good question to ask you because you're just a different guy. You have great personality and it almost doesn't feel fair to ask you about differentiation because I think most of the people will say, well, I'm not like Jay. So his advice is not going to be suitable to me.
It depends. I would say just be yourself. Don't try to be somebody else. And don't try to do everything. Like you even gave me that advice one time when I was struggling at the beginning of starting my online thing. I'm like, man, I should be doing this, this, and this. And you're like, no, you shouldn't. You should do just these two things. Forget those other 98 because they'll drive you nuts. You probably won't be good at them. So it helps to have people around and tell you what, because you don't always know. Like you may think you're strong and weak in certain areas and people are like, no, not really. You know what I mean? It's good to have that honest feedback from friends and from mentors and colleagues and whatnot. I'm off on a tangent. I forgot even what your question was. Oh, how to differentiate. Yeah, like be yourself. Don't try to do what everyone else is doing. And it can definitely work out. But you do have to market and get into business at some point. Like even if you hire people and delegate. Like I remember when you hired Tom Venuto at the beginning, you were like, you told me, and even Tom Venuto told me in an email too, you should know generally how to do a lot of these things just so when you hire people they're doing it right, not screwing you out of money. Yeah. But you don't need to know all the details, so take a little bit of time to learn social media and stuff like that, and then you could hire people and delegate it out what you don't like doing.
Yeah, that's a very good point. All right, so where would you start today, like in this era, if you were just getting started, let's say in the fitness industry?
Yeah, so I would do daily videos for sure. I'd at least put up daily stuff on Instagram and then like bigger, more high quality, well-produced stuff on YouTube at least once a week, if not three times a week. But I know people who really have a good strategy on Instagram and are killing it. So from there, what I would suggest is don't hard sell. I'd put up daily videos, take them to an email capture page, like a squeeze page, because people may be shocked in 2017. I still think email is maybe the most powerful form of marketing, if not the top one. People are glued to their phones all day. They open their email 75 times an hour. So take them, capture their email. Cause you know, people will say like, and it's true, you don't know if Facebook or YouTube or Instagram is gonna disappear. You need to have them somewhere. So build your email list, learn how to. So Matt Fury said years ago, and Dan Kennedy, who's a copywriter and marketing expert, said that Dan Kennedy was the best email marketer of all time. Matt Fury said, we pay entertainers $50 million a year. We pay teachers $50,000 a year. Don't teach, entertain. So infotain. So learn how to write emails. And in this day and age, Instagram. And I actually don't do the best job of this on social, but because I've built up my business in other ways, I can get away with it. But learn how to write emails that entertain. Learn how to tell stories. Learn how to invoke emotion. So make people angry, make them sad, make them happy, make them laugh, and then have a little bit of a lesson, but don't hard teach. Anytime I've been lazy and I've just tried to do a hard teaching thing, it doesn't make any money, it doesn't sell. But if you inspire someone or entertain them, you'll make more money and you'll motivate them to buy. And So I focus on those things, just video, cranking it out as much as possible and driving people to a squeeze page and building your list.
Okay. And then who should and who shouldn't do podcasting?
Don't do it because you think it's the big thing and the hot thing to do. Do it. Like you can do written content. Like written content's not dead. You can still do it and make a killing. So figure out what you're best at. Are you best at writing? Are you best at speaking? Are you best at being on video? For me, I can do video. I don't do as much video. I'm going to start doing a lot more video. It's because I tend to be alone more and I just like interacting with people.
Yeah.
That said, I'm going to start doing more video, but yeah, whatever. And try it. Like if you're brand new, you're not going to know. So start writing a bunch. You're like, I don't like being in front of the computer. Like I know a friend who hates writing. I'm like, dude, don't write at all. Like do a podcast, do a video, do them both for a few months or do one and whatever is more comfortable, whatever you like more, stick with that. And you don't have to do everything, right? Like maybe you're one thing, like Howard Stern doesn't write a blog and do videos. He just sits in front of a microphone. Same thing with Jimmy Fallon. He's just in front of the camera. He's not writing and whatnot. So you don't have to do everything. Do one thing, get good at it, then maybe try something else. Like you see people who are like, oh, he's got a video, he's got podcasts, he's got, but you can't do it all at once. Get good at one thing and then slowly do the next thing.
What three books should a 25-year-old read?
So again, I think you should read How to Win Friends and Influence People at Every Age. What else did we miss? I like Epictetus. Just the ones I mentioned, I think. Essentialism, The One Thing, all those kind of things. And then as you get older, I would say, I really like Try by Sebastian Younger, mm-hmm. Because I think as you get older, you kind of hit that midlife crisis or whatever, where maybe you've established your business, things are good, but what's still missing from your life? Like, and it does come down to connection and your tribe and having meaning. And so many of us forget about all that. And that's not how we evolve. Like, it's very unnatural. So reading a book like that can really be helpful.
Are we supposed to be having a midlife crisis right now? Like if we were in the 80s, would we be having it now in the early 40s?
I guess, yeah.
That's so odd.
Yeah.
I still feel like I'm 17.
So do I.
All right, good. So we're not having one. All right, finally, what is one thing that somebody can do right now to get out of their comfort zone and promote and pursue personal development and growth?
Right now, I would say... Set a goal like to interact with people every day. Take an improv class. Go to meetup.com and join some stuff. Just do those things. That's
just,
it.
Just get out of your own
head. Get out. Yeah.
All right. What's next for Jay Faruja?
We're really going to continue to blow the podcast up. I got exciting ideas for vlogging and videos that we're starting. I got some exciting guests coming up. So really just those two things. I mean, and then we are launching the new training app soon, but I'm really focused on those two things. Not trying to do too many things, just do those two really well.
All right, what about brunch?
Let's do it.
All right, let's go. All right.